Welcome to Rethinking Trade with Lori Wallach, a podcast that unpacks international trade and how it affects you without putting you to sleep.
Hello, and welcome back to Rethinking Trade with Lori Wallach. Last week, we started our conversation with Professor Suresh Venkatasubramanian. He is one of the country's leading experts on artificial intelligence, AI, and in part one of this podcast, he explained what AI is, why everyone's talking about it, and what some of the perils are. We also started delving into how AI already impacts all of us in our day-to-day lives and how policymakers can potentially ensure that we get the benefits of AI without all the perils and downsides. So as the debate on how we legislate or regulate about AI continues, let's pick up our conversation with the professor. And also, we are joined by my colleague, Danielle Ranhel, the research director of Rethink Trade, who's done some amazing research on these issues. And let's dive in to talk about what can be done as policy, the role of regulators, and at the heart of our podcast, not shocking, just how trade negotiations could impact AI oversight. So picking up our conversation again with Professor Venkatasubramanian, Suresh, you gave us some really good principles about how there should be oversight of AI and what kinds of things are important. And there are now different agencies, as you said, but also legislators trying to figure out how to make policy on AI. Suresh, do you have views about the interplay between legislators and regulators, or how either or both of them would deploy the kind of algorithmic assessments, the pre-screenings that would test these AI systems before they are unleashed on the public? It seems like really some government agency needs to be making sure that the creators of these technologies have really checked them over and that the government is checking the homework. What do you think about what's going on in Congress? Are they heading in the right direction? Is this something the agencies should be doing? What's your advice?
I think it's a complex interplay. So let me sort of try to unpack the elements of it. I think it would be important for Congress to lay out in law that agencies have authority to govern these kinds of systems, that, you know, that there is no contention about what the FTC Section 5 authority is, right, to govern business practices. Right now, the FTC is using, for example, you know, creative interpretations of its Section 5 authority to say, well, you know, an algorithm that discriminates is a deceptive algorithm, would fall under the category of a deceptive business practice. But it's a little contorted, right? It's like you're trying to work very hard. I mean, it's a good idea, but it's hard to, you know, you have to shoehorn that desire into existing authority. If Congress could clarify that, no, you can actually, you know, adjudicate discriminatory algorithms, not just under the Civil Rights Act, but the FTC can do this as well, that would be helpful, right? And so I think Congress should also, in its legislation, mandate the kinds of reporting and transparency that would allow regulators to do their work, right? So it is going to be very hard for a regulator to say, you know, I need access to your source code. That's unlikely to work. It's unlikely to be helpful. And they'll get caught up in all kinds of disputes about proprietary information and IP and, IP and so on. But what it is reasonable to say is, you know, you need to produce for me evidence of testing showing that your system is doing what you claim it to do. And that is something that is actually valid to do, right? And you have to produce this. You know, you can't just say, we'll get back to you. You need to produce this. And having the authority to demand that and having some flexibility to sort of adjust what you ask for as things. And that's why it's important for Congress to set up scoping for what the regulatory agencies can do in a way that's not too specific, because things will evolve and change. So give them broad authorities to adjust to these, as the technology evolves. That's going to be important. How the regulatory apparatus interacts with these systems is tricky. So for example, let me give you one case where it gets complicated. In the case of looking at algorithms to issue loans, to do credit assessments, for example, right, do credit scoring, there is a complicated set of rules about whether the entities who are doing this can collect demographic information or not, or should they collect demographic information or not. On the one hand, if you don't collect demographic information, how will you know if you're being discriminatory? On the other hand, if you collect demographic information, maybe you will be discriminatory and you don't want to do that either. And so there's a lot of, it's unclear right now what the right mechanism is in place to do this, right? And this is a very low level detail. I don't expect Congress to sort of weigh in at this level of detail. But having ways for regulators and the entities, you know, issuing loans to work together in a way that, you know, allows, for example, a bank to do disparity mitigation through some process of collecting of data, but in a way that doesn't penalize them for doing this is very important, right? So this idea of sandboxing, that you can, you're, it's okay to collect fraught data, but in a very controlled environment to test, is an interesting one. Another alternative, and this is something that, you know, students at the center here at Brown are working on, is can you actually do this evaluation without having to collect the data in a kind of secure, sort of privacy-preserving way? And I think that's a whole bunch of interesting technical questions on how to do that. So I think this is an ongoing discussion where Congress should come in and where the legislators should come in is mandating and giving authority to regulators to do this kind of work. But the details will matter in every specific context. And I think it's one of the challenges in the space that there are broad principles and there are broad guidelines, but there's also sector-specific stuff that is very detailed and specific to one sector or the other that only those who work in that sector understand really well, and they have to customize for their needs.
What do you think about the legislative proposals that have been made in recent years of, for instance, having certain companies that have certain size and that impact a lot of people to have impact assessments that are disclosed to the FTC? And if you agree with that whole notion, what do you think that that impact assessment should have in order for the FTC to preemptively check for all of these potential harms that the system might have?
I have mixed feelings about the whole, you know, if you're big enough, we should look into what you're doing, because it depends on how big enough is defined. The whole point of AI is that, you know, a small company with a piece of code can actually impact millions of people. And so, you know, I know we talk about, for example, social media companies and their user base and the number of active users they have as a measure, for example, in the European DSA and the DMA. I understand why that makes sense there, because if you're a big social network, by definition, your user base is the number of people you impact and your revenue controls that. But in a lot of the spaces that I think about, especially in decision making, small companies making small pieces of software can have huge impact. And so I'm more interested in the level of impact than the size of the entity producing that impact. They're not all, they're often aligned, but they're not the same thing. But to your question about, you know, regulatory proposal or legislative proposals in place, I think there's a whole bunch of them right now. So it's hard to tell. There are things about transparency, that's good. There are things about government procurement, that's good. There are things about government use of technology, that's also good. There's less about, you know, limitations on what private companies can do, that's not so good. And so it varies. I think we'll have to wait and see when the proposals start crystallizing. You know, California had this proposal that for a while was moving towards passage and is now on hold, and it might come back again next year. I think it's called AB 331. But that had a fairly comprehensive view on who was in scope, both private and public sector, and what kinds of things were in scope. It had also lots of limitations, I think. It wasn't perfect. But in terms of scoping, it covered, I think, the right bases there. So we'll see.
So it's a process in formation. And I think whatever ends up being a good approach and solves all these problems you're raising, what one thing that seems foreseeably clear is that making the tools one needs, like algorithmic assessments, illegal trade barriers, would not be a good step, which is to say there are some tools that all of these different approaches need: detailed documentation, transparency. And this sort of connects to how we started thinking a lot about AI here at Rethinking Trade. So the US government is so ginormous that sometimes the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is up to. And I'm wondering, when you are basically leading the Office of Science and Technology in the White House, was it clear to you and your colleagues who were working on the AI Bill of Rights that the Trade Representative's Office and the Commerce Department were simultaneously negotiating trade agreements with what are called digital trade rules that might actually conflict with some of those building block tools that basically are going to have to be part of any one of these different approaches for oversight.
Yeah, I should first say I was mostly a minion in OSTP. I was not leading the effort, but there was a big team, and you know, led by Alondra Nelson, whose inspiration this whole thing was. So I want to be very clear about that first. But I think your point is an interesting one. That it is not the case, I would say, necessarily that you know the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. I think that there are multiple priorities that are being represented, and they don't always align. If someone in OSTP is saying that we need governance of AI systems, and all the biggest companies developing AI systems are US-based companies, that looks very different if you're in the Commerce Department and your job is to support US business in the country and across the world, or if the US Trade Representative and you want to make sure that US companies can operate freely across the world. So balancing all these different priorities is, of course, tricky. And, you know, I won't say that everyone agrees on how we should proceed. I think, you know, the process by which the blueprint was developed, and maybe this is not as well known, is through a very extensive interagency process, including, and I would say, extensive commenting from our friends at the Department of Commerce, including NIST, including NTIA, with comments from the U.S. Trade Rep's office, with comments from, you know, our national security sort of colleagues, people from the Department of Justice, a lot of different, you know, virtually every government agency weighed in on this document. But of course, you know, that's what makes it tricky, because there are different valid, you know, objectives that don't always align. And so how to balance them is a struggle. And I think the blueprint is not an attempt to go off on a limb. It is a result of balancing all of these concerns. It does reflect a consensus within the U.S. government on this, even though there were, you know, people expressed, you know, some concerns about, you know, scoping to law enforcement and national security and other things like that.
That's super helpful to understand. So it's not a matter of cooperation and coordination, because there was tons of that, but rather it is literally conflicting goals and priorities. I'm going to cue in Daniel now just to share with our listeners the crux of the report he just wrote about what is the conflict, what is the issue, because that background of where it may have emerged from will helpfully frame what practically it is.
So the main issue that we're seeing in this area, and where we're seeing conflicting goals between what the US government is doing on one side, of the administration, and in the other one, is that these digital trade agreements that would also apply for the US is not only rules that we are imposing on our partners, and include a rule that's called source code, but it's much more than source code. So basically what it does is that it bans governments from requiring access or disclosure of source code, but it also includes a broad mention to algorithms. And what we have seen is that in that last version of the rule that was included in the United States, Mexico, Canada agreement, the USMCA, which was negotiated in 2019, is that that kind of prohibition will actually collide with some of the tools that we have been discussing throughout this conversation. If the US government would require, or if the US Congress would require certain companies to conduct impact assessments that have to have evidence that an algorithmic system is not biased, is accurate, and does not harm, and then it has to submit it to a regulator, then that will probably conflict with this kind of rule. And that's why we are concerned about this kind of limitations that are being imposed in trade agreements on the important efforts that all the folks in the AI community are doing.
I think you're right to be concerned about this. I think this is a critical problem. Transparency is at the core. It's at the foundation of anything we want to do to make sure that we can protect people in the, you know, in an algorithmically driven world. Without transparency, you have nothing. Now, transparency is a means to an end. It's the real goal is accountability. And you know, we can have arguments over what forms of disclosure are most helpful. You know, we can talk about the need to protect individual companies' IP. I understand all those concerns. But you cannot do any kind of accountability unless you have the ability to demand and understand how a system is working and what kind of evaluation has happened. Now, the issue of, you know, do you need access to the source code or not is a different issue. I think there are people who will argue that, yes, you do. And there are those who will argue that you don't need the source code as long as you have detailed descriptions of how the system was tested and how it was evaluated. That's, I think, a reasonable discussion to have in any specific context. In some contexts, it makes more sense. If you're doing things with cryptography and not having access to source code is a real problem. And in some other cases, maybe you can manage with testing. That's fine. But without transparency and the ability, this goes back to my earlier point, right? You can't micromanage the kinds of abilities that the regulators would have. You need to give them broad authorities to ask questions that could change over time. Now with generative AI, you know, what kinds of questions we need to ask are going to be different. You need that flexibility. And if you cut that off, you know, at the root through, you know, these agreements that you're referring to, that's going to be a huge, huge problem.
And for folks who want to see what some of this language is, go to our website, which is rethinktrade.org, and look for Daniel's report on AI and secrecy in digital trade. And I also recommend the 2023 annual report of a group called AI Now that has a terrific, clear chapter on this potential conflict. The problem is that the specific language that some of the tech lobbyists have put in there has a very broad description of algorithms to more or less mean just the description of what the thing does. And so that, beyond the question of source code or not source code, bumps into, in the broadest sense, the sort of descriptive oversight transparency requirements that seem to be at the heart of a lot of these approaches. But not all of them, because one last thing I want to ask Suresh is what you think about the EU's AI regulation. So that's a slightly different approach. It has some very direct limits on the use of AI and surveillance. I see Suresh is wrinkling his forehead, which makes me think I've got this wrong, but that's what my colleagues in the EU have said. And I'm wondering, even more broadly, beyond the EU's approach, if you think there's a role for international policymaking around AI to set effective guardrails. Though I'd still love to hear what you think about the EU approach, and please correct me if I've described it incorrectly.
Yes, I mean, the EU does have, in the AI Act, which is, you know, going through passage right now, does have a couple of use cases that are just in which the use of AI is forbidden. I think social scoring systems is one of them, and certain forms of real-time surveillance. The idea of having certain cases that are banned is definitely part of the, you know, and the idea of having high-risk scenarios where the scrutiny is higher makes sense. They have that too. I think there's a lot that makes sense in the AI Act. I think that it is still very much focused on the technologies themselves, and has tried to make a very detailed list of cases, use cases where you have to be concerned. I worry that legislation of this kind is not very flexible. It is not able to adjust to new developments. I think we've already seen that once ChatGPT came out, there was a flurry of work to try and incorporate or not reasoning about foundation, you know, these sort of front, whatever you call them, like large, you know, language models and things like that into the system. And there's been a bit of a struggle with, you know, what to do about these kinds of models as well. And I think, you know, one of the approaches we took with the blueprint was to not actually define AI, because our point of view was that the central focus of attention was on impact on people. And while AI was a key factor, it's not the only way technology impacts people. And so that matters more than which piece of technology you're talking about. So that's one thing that I think there's a little bit of a difference between how the AI Act thinks about it. I think in terms of values, there are many similar values. So I don't think there's too much into it. But to your broader question about international agreements, that's tricky, right? Because I think different entities, whether it's the EU, whether it's individual countries, you know, India just passed a data protection law of a kind. whatever China's doing, they're all different. And they reflect different norms and values that different countries have. I mean, we do have broader international agreements on things like human rights. And I think framing some of these protections in terms of human rights can be helpful because there's broad agreement and treaties around that. But I think beyond that, it gets tricky because there's different infrastructure, different regulatory apparatus, different cultures on who's trusted and who's not. You know, a lot of the EU guidelines make it very clear they do not trust businesses. I think in the US has been a long streak of we don't trust the state, but businesses are fine. People different, and now I think we're being challenged by that perspective a little bit, that maybe we don't trust businesses as much. But it's tricky, I think. I think it's helpful to have international agreements as far as possible because companies are multinationals and they work across borders and you need treaties of those kind. But I do think there's going to be a mix of country-specific or unit-specific or consortium-specific guidelines as well as things that are broader that might be less detailed by necessity.
Suresh, that's super helpful, and it just underscores how complicated this all is.
Yes, and I think that part of the problem that we're experiencing is that the conversation is siloed. So we have the tech fairness community that is doing something very important in the domestic sphere. We also have the European that they are doing their own things. And we have this issue of policy space excavation through trade deals. And what we often wonder is how we can make sure that we can bridge those conversations and particularly bring in technologies who have the technical expertise about the tools that we need to make AI accountable to understand what's going on in the trade world and to weigh in order to make sure that we don't end up in a place where we definitely don't want to be.
That's a good question. And I will say I am definitely one of those people who did not really understand the ramifications of these trade agreements for AI accountability till I talked to you and Lori about this. So I think what's tricky, I think, here is that it's a combination of incentives and action, right, and knowledge. It's one thing to be aware of these concerns. And I think any technologist whom you would explain this to would understand, okay, this seems like an issue. But it's not clear what to do. Like, as a technologist, what am I supposed to do about this? What is the role I can play? So let me give you maybe a far-fetched example, right? A lot of the discussions about cryptographic systems are international because there was the issue of export controls back in the 90s and whether cryptography, and then there's the issue right now, for example, in UK with the Online Safety Act and the implication within the Online Safety Act that you could do certain kinds of scanning even with end-to-end encryption. That's just not true, just technically wrong. And so cryptographers have actually been used to fighting these battles in the international arena for a while. And they immediately jumped on and said, the thing you are claiming can be done cannot be done. It is technically impossible. And that, you know, eventually the UK government just this week has sort of backed off its claims about this and is sort of backing very rapidly away from its assertion that any, you know, system like WhatsApp or Signal has to comply with these rules. We'll see how this plays out. So I think finding a way for the technologists who think about this, people like myself, right, to sort of have a place where we can weigh in. So in this case, you know, if there's a way to sort of talk about the goals of transparency, the goals of access to systems to do testing, and pointing out that none of this can be done, right, technically, just from a technical point of view, you can't do any of these things, but also establishing that it is something important to do. I think the trouble is that we haven't yet established that testing of systems is something we have to do. If we did, then it would be easy to say, the thing you've all agreed we have to do, we can't do if you sign this treaty. We're still in the stage of, well, should we do testing? And I think that's where some of the challenges come in. So I don't know if I have a good answer for you, but I feel like that's where it is difficult. Like I just said to you, that you cannot do any of the transparency provisions in the blueprint if you don't have access or at least some way of accessing the systems and interrogating the systems or being allowed to ask about the systems. And if this treaty prohibits that, that'll be bad. I can say that, but I'm not sure how to get broader support for this. Okay, this is a big problem.
A first step to that is this kind of a conversation, which would not have been possible without you. So thank you very much, Professor Suresh Venkatasubramanian, for actually helping inform people about where these issues intersect. Gentlemen, thank you so much. I hope this conversation was as helpful for everyone else as it was for me, because I've certainly just learned a lot. And I'm sure we'll come back to this topic. Meanwhile, everyone stand by for news you can expect by the end of October when the administration comes out with a new executive order on AI. There's a big push to actually formalize some of the great ideas that Professor Venkatasubramanian talked about that were in the AI Bill of Rights, like pre-screening. I'm sure we'll come back to this topic down the road. For now, though, stay tuned for the next episode of Rethinking Trade with Lori Wallach, where we will dive into some new themes very soon.